It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Kevin Brinkley. Kevin is CEO, Plains Cotton Cooperative Association. We'll talk cotton in just a moment. First off, let's talk Securities Exchange Commission coming after agriculture. Andrew Walmsley is Senior Director of Government Affairs with the American Farm Bureau Federation.
We did put in an extension request. It had 120 groups on there. Our friends, National Pork Producers Council, National Cattlemen's, a lot of the ag commodity groups, some of our state farm bureaus got involved with that. So we have at least had a minor victory, I guess you could say, it after that extension request that the SEC did grant us some more time. But yeah, this is something that we're trying to educate folks on, not only our members, but also Capitol Hill. You know, getting Congress more involved. We need folks speaking up on their concerns on this proposed rule.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Kevin Brinkley. Kevin is CEO for Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, PCCA, headquartered in Lubbock. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Tony. It is always good to be here with you.
Well, your background, you actually grew up just south of Lubbock.
I grew up in Burnett, Texas, which is on the north end of the hill country. And actually, oddly enough, it doesn't sound possible. My granddad was a cotton farmer there until mechanized agriculture came in and made it better that you didn't pick cotton with his family. So, we cow-calf, those sorts of things. But really got into cotton once I got to be a student here at Texas Tech. More years ago than I care to remember.
At this point, we're looking at markets that are, 10-year highs, and doesn't appear as though we'll be testing the all-time high, at least not yet. But how in the world did we get here?
Well, the answer is probably simpler than we want to think it is. But the fact is that we've just been consuming more cotton than we have had the ability to produce it. So if you'll remember that during the very front end of the pandemic, cotton consumption crashed along with everything else because people were at home. They didn't know what to do. And boy, has it ever rebounded since then. You know, you've had record apparel sales in the U.S., and consumers, I think, have been leading the charge on making those choices themselves. And so if you look at sort of the pandemic low level of around 23 pounds per person annually of cotton consumed, 2021, each American used the average of about 30 pounds of cotton, which is, we haven't seen that number in a very long time. And so consumers have been out there just making it happen. And, this not just in the U.S., it's globally. So that, really is what is driving this consumption picture. And right now, you know, USDA is talking about north of 124 million bales of cotton consumed this crop year, and not even producing 120 million. So, it's a picture where there's just not enough cotton to serve the needs out there. And so the market is trying to find a level that it can kind of squelch some of that demand. Haven't found it yet, though.
There are some projections out there as to how many acres of cotton we'll plant this year, but part of the challenge is whether or not we'll have Mother Nature helping out with the growth of that cotton. Is that a concern?
Well, it is here in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. I mean, here we are on a Monday, and you really only need to look out your window at the flagpole and the high temperatures. And boy, I tell you, it's just hard to figure out how it's going to happen, but we've got to remain optimistic. You know, I think this past weekend, I think we set the record high temperature for that date by about 2 degrees. So true to the meteorologist, you know, predictions, this season is starting off very warm and dry. And so we're going to need some of those disturbances to change the picture here in the Southwest. But, you know, when you get down to it, it's not just U.S. weather. You know, you could go over into the south into the Delta and the southeast, and some of those areas have not enough rain or too much rain. But then you could go all the way, you know, to Brazil or India or China, and you could find your own weather challenges in those major consuming countries. So the weather is all over the board, and you know, making the production outlook very, very interesting at this point in time. And you know, that's a worry point for a lot of world textile mills.
Well, we started with how'd we get here, where we actually are today. I guess the next question there, it's kind of an obvious one, is where are we going?
Well, I think there's a number of things we could talk about on this. I think the first thing you've got to consider, you know, is what's going to happen with inflation. Again, not just a U.S. story, but a global one. In fact, here in the U.S., it doesn't feel like it for those of us that live here, but we might actually be in better shape than a lot of other developed economies around the world, and certainly much better shape than the you know, the underdeveloped economies. But you know, you see year over year inflation prints, and we've been running several months of these now of 6% and 8% over the previous year. Sooner or later, a consumer is going to have to make hard choices. And, you know, we know that from experience that most of that time they protect their vital organs, you know, which is food and gasoline and those sorts of things. And so we'll kind of have to wait and see what kind of an impact that has on cotton. But you also have this, I've gotten where I hate to even utter this phrase, but supply chain constraints are still causing a whole lot of friction out there. And certainly it costs more to get goods from where they originated to where they're going, where the consumer wants it. And all that has left, you know, the Federal Reserve has had a very accommodated monetary policy, some would say loose. And they were trying to do that to generate some inflation. And they overshot the runway. And that's how we got these numbers that we're looking at today. So now they're trying to reverse engineer that and raise interest rates to suppress consumer demand to put downward pressure on prices. And you've seen some of that manifest itself in the stock market. You know, we sold off quite a bit there. And actually, if you look at the GDP for the U.S. in the first quarter, it was a contraction, a slowing of 1.4%, which was not expected. So we'll see where that heads. You know, if you're a producer, you're kind of feeling it in terms of input prices. Almost all input prices are heading toward, you know, if not record levels, very, very high. And that's mostly on the back of energy prices. Then you've got that little thing, the war over that Russia has gone into Ukraine. That's just causing turmoil. And you're going to see that in terms of food prices, obviously. But it's also causing shipping issues around that part of the world. And then probably the worst one of all, Tony, I think, is the zero COVID policy in China. And I think you could probably take all these other factors and put those on one side of the ledger and put the zero COVID impact in China on the other side. And they might just about balance out, if not tilt toward the Chinese problem. And, you know, you have places like Shanghai and Beijing, those two cities together are about 45 million people. And those are just two places. You've got lockdowns all over China where they make a great deal of the stuff that we consume here. They also use one out of every three bales of cotton grown in the world. And so if, you know, if those factories are slowed down because people can't go to work, that's certainly going to put a dent in the production of textiles, but also their ability to buy textiles. So if you're locked in your apartment in Shanghai, you cannot go out to the store and buy something. That's going to put a dent in demand there. So I hate to be the bearer of so much bad news, Tony, but this is just kind of the world that we live in at the moment. And, you know, we just got to figure out ways to make the best of it.
Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, you have a marketing division and really a variety of choices to help market the crop. How does PCCA manage through those three options there?
Well, we want to have something that we can offer for every grower to, you know, sell his cotton the way he wants to sell it, when he wants to sell it. So we wanted to have a really good marketing experience. And so for producers that, you know, that, again, given the weather conditions we've got right now, I think we'll have a lot of them that will actually just kind of see what they produce, and with prices being where they are, they'll probably go toward the cash market. And so that looks like either the SEAM, which of DCCA is the exclusive provider of the SEAM in this area, and the SEAM offers a producer the ability to simultaneously offer his cotton out to dozens and dozens of all the major and even the small cotton buyers here in the U.S. and abroad. So he can essentially kind of conduct an auction for his cotton, if you want to look at it that way. But we also, we're very active in cash trading for producers that want to have a bit more hands-on, and we have a thing called PCCA Direct where we can kind of help them position their cotton in the right way and get them custom pricing on that. For producers that have pretty good irrigation and have a pretty good conviction that they can raise a crop, we offer some contract options for them. Certainly the prices are at really good levels right now, but the production outlook is kind of iffy. We only do bale contracts here at PCCA. The reason for that, you would have to, again, just look out your window and know that conditions are dry. And so our bale contracts are something, though, that we have very competitive levels on those. And then lastly, the pool is designed for those that want to have PCCA do the marketing for them, and that is an acre commitment. So the beauty of that is that you're not committed to a certain number of bales. You just deliver the production off those acres, and then we market that cotton, all that cotton together across the year, and look for the best opportunities to do that. And then we pay an average return out to all the growers that are involved in the pool. So those are kind of the three options that are available out there in general terms. But our staff would, love to talk to anybody about what it is that meets their need.
And if we want to learn more about PCCA, where do we find out?
Well, I think the easiest place to get in touch with us is just go to our website. It's just pcca.com. And right on the front page there will be several links that tell you about our marketing options. But we always prefer personal contact. So our number is on that website, but it's just 806-763-8011. And just ask to speak to member services or our sales department, and they will be glad to go through the options and get somebody started on the marketing process.
Kevin Brinkley is CEO of Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, online pcca.com. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
When looking for your next career, what matters to you? At Livingston Machinery, we are service-oriented to be sure our customers have an excellent experience. We are passionate about agriculture and act with integrity and responsibility. We treat our teammates and our customers like family to ensure each other's success. Does this ring true to you? Maybe your career is waiting for you at Livingston Machinery. View available positions now at livingstonmachinery.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Kevin Brinkley, with Plains Cotton Cooperative Association.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early-season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in-furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you, This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with Plains Cotton Cooperative Association online, pcca.com.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
During the 2015 U.S. outbreak of avian influenza, over 50 million chickens and turkeys died as flocks were culled to slow the spread of the virus. So what about this current outbreak?
I don't necessarily think we're going to get to the 50 million bird situation that we had in 2015.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling farm broadcasters visiting at USDA this week one reason he feels we're not going to lose 50 million birds this time is
because I think our producers are doing a better job from a biosecurity perspective. They understand and appreciate the necessity of closing things down and making sure that they're careful.
Vilsack, who was Ag Secretary during that 2015 outbreak, says this time it seems to be less stressful for the industry as well.
Because we've been through this, we understood the importance of early identification, of being able to quarantine, to depopulate quickly and dispose properly, which that was some of the challenges in 2015. We didn't have all that in place.
Also, this time the virus has hit more backyard flocks, fewer commercial facilities. Gary Crawford, Washington.